#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Glad you'd be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we take you across the night tonight and around the spectrum of sports. We've got everything tonight. We've got some NBA. We've got Major League Baseball, NFL. But we got to start with college basketball. And I'm not going to fall into that simple trap of saying because a number one team goes down that it was an upset. Not this year. And this was not an upset tonight when Xavier knocked off Villanova, because the Musketeers are ranked fifth in the nation. They might as well be number one this year. There is not that much separation between one and, I don't know, seven in college basketball, especially when the team, a team like Xavier, plays at home. But this was as entertaining of a game as I've seen this year. And I've been feeling like I've been saying that a lot, but I feel like the games have been getting better and better as we get closer and closer to the end of the season towards Selection Sunday. This was really, really fun. The excitement and the energy in Xavier for this game tonight. They have not beaten Villanova since entering the Big East. They were 0-6 against the Wildcats. They were bombed against Villanova earlier this year. That was the game where Edmund Sumner went down with that concussion. Tonight, though, Xavier showed that they are a legit one seed if they keep this up. They go to 25-3. They have extremely good depth. I mean, JP McCura had 19 points coming off the bench tonight. Edmund Summers with 19 and 9 assists. This is as good of one of the good, better teams in college basketball in a sea of them this year. And Villanova, this isn't a bad loss for the Wildcats. This is a road loss. They got into some foul trouble in this game. They got into some turnover problems in this game. And Xavier just played better. Again, they showed off their depth. They showed off the three-point shooting, the things that are making Xavier very good. I never really pay much attention to the Musketeers. And Xavier's had some good teams. But I've never really taken Xavier seriously over the last couple of years. And that's mostly on me. It's not on them. It's mostly on me. Because a lot of times their resume isn't all that stellar, and they've lost to number one teams and top teams and whatnot. This year, though, they have really had a nice schedule. They have put together good wins this year, really solid wins, very, very good basketball team. They shot 50% tonight against a Villanova team that is just known for its defensive performance. They were strong in the paint. They had six guys in double figures. Again, this is as complete of a win against a number one team that we've seen. It's time to start taking Xavier seriously as a number one seed in this NCAA tournament. If Xavier's been under the radar for you, and for whatever reason, and like I said, for years Xavier has been under my radar, this is the time to wake up. Because, like I said, you look at teams that get good guard play, and they've got good guard play with Sumner. You look at teams that got a little depth. I mean, you shorten your bench sometimes in the NCAA tournament. You don't necessarily have to go 7-8 deep, you know, in one shot, in one game deals. But depth certainly helps, and they're deep. Chris Mack is a good coach there, so they're well coached. They do a lot of things right. And they've had themselves a very, very good year where they've met a lot of challenges. Yeah, the blowout loss to Villanova was bad. But again, Sumner went down with that concussion, that nasty fall, kind of threw them off a bit. They had the loss to Georgetown that kind of woke them up a little bit. They had the loss to Creighton. But other than that, they have met the challenge of their conference. And like I've been saying all year long, look at the way college basketball is, right? No dominating team, and that's fine. All of these kind of the fluctuations that we're getting in the polls, I'm okay with that. What I want is quality. What I want is very entertaining games. And I got a good entertaining game tonight. I've been getting a few entertaining games this year. Now, some of the games, just because it's close, doesn't mean the game has been very good. And I've seen that happen this year a number of times. But there is just no consistency as to what we're doing. You get a number one seed in college basketball, good luck holding on to it, because it's only a matter of time before you're knocked from that perch. Villanova is just the latest. And and there'll probably be another one. Another surprise before we get to the conference tournaments, which, by the way, now, because of the openness of college basketball, I'm really looking forward to these conference tournaments to really see if anybody wants to make a move, anyone wants to make a late push. Are they capable of making a late push? If you're the Big 12 and you're in the middle of the pack, can you seriously make a serious run in the conference tournament to get more of your resume tightened up for the selection committee? What if you're in the ACC? And it's the same thing. Do you need that extra win or two? You really need that top win. Do you get it in your conference tournament? These are all going to start to be really good. I hope these teams score off again in the Big East tournament. I really hope they do, because it was fun tonight. I'd like to see it again. It's better than the first time they met. I mean, Villanova just demolished them. But this was a really fun game. 800-777-2907, the telephone number to join us tonight. Also, if you want to hit us up on Twitter, feel free at Tony D Radio. Look us up on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show as well. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to talk to Chris Swick, of Yahoo Sports, Big League Stew. And we're going to do this every single Wednesday night into Thursday, all for the next 6 weeks. We're going to break down a division in Major League Baseball. And we're going to start with the American League East, which is really complicated to figure out where that division is going to go. Everything looks good on paper, but as you know, looking good on paper doesn't necessarily mean you look good on the field. The Red Sox have made some additions. The Orioles have made a big splash. The Yankees have got a strong bullpen. Toronto has lost David Price, but they can hit the ball out of the park all the time. So there's a lot of little complexes. I forgot the Rays. I mean, they're still a young team, but they can do some things well. So there are a lot of complexes to teams in the American League East. There are things that you're really excited about, and then there's real things that are really a problem. So we're going to sort that out coming up at the bottom of the hour as well. But staying in the theme of college basketball, as the NCAA tournament gets closer and closer, there are going to be, naturally, we do this every single year, some dark horse teams that you should be paying attention to. And one of those teams that's a dark horse in this tournament, and I wouldn't even really, I use the word dark horse loosely, are the Wisconsin Badgers, who beat Iowa tonight 67-59. And Greg Gard, now remember the story of what went on with the Wisconsin Badgers and Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan retired midway through the season. Well, I wouldn't say midway through the season, just before conference tournament start, conference play started. He had retired and gave the team over to Greg Gard, who may or may not been heir apparent to the job. And he was given the keys to a Wisconsin team that had a massive roster overhaul, and yet was expected to do something with it to go earn your job. And it was seen like that. Bo Ryan handing the baton over to Greg Gard, a longtime assistant, to say, here, do something with this and earn the Wisconsin job. I feel you've deserved it. Here it is. Go get it. And there was a three-game losing stretch during the season. There was a time where things didn't look all that great. Then they started picking up a lot of good wins, beating Michigan State, beating Indiana. They beat Maryland, and now they beat Iowa. They are seriously putting themselves together as a watch-out-for-Wisconsin type of team. So again, dark horses are going to pop up in every NCAA tournament, even when you have dominant programs, even when a Kentucky goes in undefeated, and even when the Duke Blue Devils look unbeatable, or North Carolina looks like they're going to win it all again, or Kansas looks strong. Because of the nature of the tournament, there's always teams you should pay attention to. Oh, unranked teams that you should be paying attention to. And Wisconsin has got my vote. There are others, and I'm going to get to that later on in the show tonight. There are others to kind of pay attention to as well. But, hey, listen, this is working out right now for Greg Gard. He's another top 25 victory for his Wisconsin Badgers. And in a year where he's had a bunch of them. And he's got three, if I can remember, three in the top five. Top 10. He's beat Michigan State when they were ranked fourth. He beat Maryland when they were ranked second. He beat Iowa when they were ranked eighth. So I really like what Wisconsin is doing. Again, 800-777-2907. Coming up next, though, Yesterday, we talked about a bizarre press conference at the University of Tennessee, where the culture of the University of Tennessee has been called into question. And these coaches called a press conference to show solidarity in support of their university. The person that spoke the most was head coach Butch Jones. And the latest accusation against him is damning. I'll tell you what it is next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Glad you've been with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Swick will join us. We'll talk AL East, part of our six-part preview of the Major League Baseball season that'll happen once a week at this very, very time. All right, yesterday we told you the story of the University of Tennessee. 16 varsity coaches held a press conference to show solidarity at all of the accusations that had been kind of thrown the university's way. It's a Title IX lawsuit filed against the school claiming that there was a hostile environment and that sexual assault, well, it was covered up, in other words. Well, the 16 the coaches that went to the press conference, you know, wanted to support the culture of Tennessee and saying this is not true, that this does not go on, especially head football coach Butch Jones, who felt for the victims who have been victimized of sexual assault. He said, my heart goes out to them. Holly Warlick, the head women's basketball coach, said she had a daughter, she wouldn't hesitate to send her to Tennessee. They were basically saying, look, what you think about this school, what you think about the culture here is wrong. What you think about the athletic department is wrong. We would never stand for this. If we knew this was going on, we would never stand for this. There isn't a culture of cover-up here. If this happens, we deal with it. We talk to our players. We talk to our girls about being safe. We do these things. We don't cover this up. We don't condone this stuff. That was basically their message. I said yesterday, and I still stand by it, that it was not to really support Tennessee. It was really to counter the nasty recruiting tactics that were being used against Tennessee. And I still believe that. That when you get 16 coaches in a press conference together without the AD, you are responding to what they're hearing on the recruiting trail. How is my kid going to be safe at your school? How is my daughter going to be safe playing at your school? What kind of institution are you running there where football players are getting accused of domestic violence and all of that kind of stuff? I think they were out to set the record straight. Butch Jones in particular. But this latest amendment to the Title IX lawsuit is damning to Butch Jones. According to Dre Bowles, who is a football player, who helped a woman who had been sexually assaulted by two football players. He helped this woman. Jones allegedly said he betrayed the team, called him a traitor. Kurt Majette, a linebacker on the team, punched Dre Bowles, and Jones did nothing. He was also pushed around by two other players, and Jones did nothing. This is to the amendment to the Title IX case against the University of Tennessee. This is what Dre Bowles contends. He later left Knoxville and headed to UT Chattanooga. Bowles punched in the mouth, bloodied by teammate Kurt Majette, and he was also harassed at a lunch table. Jones did not handle either one of these instances. And while Bowles continued to practice with the team, he then later transferred to the University of Chattanooga, UT Chattanooga. Now, this is, if true, a fireable offense. This is a fireable offense because of what happened yesterday and because of the fact that a school cannot allow this culture to permeate. at all in this day and age, in any age, but more precisely in this day and age. You have to get rid of the Neanderthal football culture on campuses. That if two football players sexually assaulted a woman and another football player came to her rescue, that there is no need to call that young man a traitor. However, Jones has responded to this. He said that the allegations are absolutely false. Quote, and I'll read what he wrote. To the contrary, I did all I could to assist the former student in question. During the course of the judicial process, campus officials, as well as the young man's own words, will clearly establish that I had done nothing wrong. I will fight all of these false attacks on my character, and I know that once this process has been completed, my reputation will be affirmed. I hope so. Because I will say this until proven otherwise. I like Butch Jones. Living in Tennessee, seeing where that program had been, seeing what this man has done to this program, seeing how players have responded to him, I like Butch Jones. I think he's doing a very, very good job there, but he seems, and I don't know him personally, he seems to be a good enough person where this isn't true. But I don't know this man, and I don't know why a coach would say something like this, knowing it could damage and fire him and ruin his reputation. Yet some coaches are careless. And we've seen that time and time again, where coaches don't think, or they think that no way will this ever get out, or I'm not even thinking about what I'm saying and the damage that this may cause. And later they go on an apologetic spree and they get let go. And when they get let go, they have to go on some television show to explain themselves and to apologize profusely until almost we're sick of hearing it. Because sometimes these guys don't know when to keep their stupid mouths shut. And in the case of Butch Jones, I hope that this is 100% false. Because if he reprimanded a player for coming to the aid of a woman who was sexually assaulted by two football players and told that player he betrayed his team, Tennessee has no choice. How do you defend that? And how do you defend that today in the culture that we live in, where this kind of stuff is simply not tolerated on any level whatsoever? There is no more boys being boys anymore. It's a crime then, it's a crime now. A cover-up then, a cover-up now. And Tennessee is swimming in this. And if this is true, and Tennessee knows it's true, they have to let Butch Jones go. Because they can't have a coach at what they're going through. They cannot have a coach where this was even said or even hinted at. So I hope for Butch Jones, if he did not do this, he's going to have to fight. Because this guy, this wide receiver, Dre Bowles, is willing to swear in a court that this happened. And Jones, who, again, made the biggest splash on Tuesday's press conference by reiterating that you're stereotyping football players when you talk about parties and the shenanigans that go on at parties that are damaging to students. Don't stereotype my football team. There is no culture like that here at Tennessee. According to Dre Bowles, there is a culture like that at Tennessee, and that's why this lawsuit is filed. I hope for his sake, for a guy that I admire and like, but it's fragile. I can take it away as soon as I give it. I hope for Butch Jones' sake that it's absolutely false. We'll talk Major League Baseball next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. Make you burn.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, spring training has begun, and it's time to start breaking down the divisions in the American League and the National League. And we're going to start this week, and we're going to do this every week all the way through to the start of the season. This week, it's the American League East, with the Yankees got a strong bullpen, and the Red Sox picking up David Price, and Toronto has still got one of the formidable lineups in baseball. We bring in Chris Swick from Yahoo Sports Big League Stew to give us his take on the American League East. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
All right, before we get picking apart the individual teams, overall, how competitive is this division? With all of the changes, how tight should this division be towards the end?
Well, yeah, I have to thank you for giving me the most difficult division to predict right off the bat. I really think, especially after the moves the Orioles made, any of the five teams could probably win the division. I truly see maybe three top contenders, then one kind of medium, and then I still think there's one lagging behind, but I do think this is probably, going into the year, going to be the most competitive and the toughest division, at least in the American League.
I brought up Toronto. They have a formidable lineup. We know that, but they did lose David Price, and now Marcus Stroman is going to become their ace. Is that a concern for the Blue Jays?
Definite concern about losing Price. I'm a big Marcus Stroman fan. I love the numbers. I love the competitiveness on the mound. I think he has all the makings of an ace-type pitcher. My only concern with him would be he only threw 24 innings last year due to injury, and so you kind of worry about that as the season goes on. If they're in playoff contention, are they going to continue to push him and test that young arm? You know, we've seen the last couple years teams have been really hesitant to do that, and you know, he's big for them because they really need him to step up. The rest of the rotation, there is a lot of concern there. R.A. Dickey is getting much older. He's 41 right now. Marco Estrada's season was kind of built on smoke and mirrors, and you don't expect that kind of improvement from a 32-year-old. And Jay Happ, it's almost the same thing as Estrada. I mean, over the second half of the season, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball, but he has a career of just being a number five starter. So there's a lot of question marks there. But like you said, you know, that lineup is still tremendous, and that carried them through most of the first half of the season. So I still feel like they're a strong contender despite the losses.
Yeah, that lineup can really hide a lot of your pitching sins, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And, you know, they were a team I wound up watching a lot last year. You know, mainly because they were just a lot of fun to watch at the plate. And so just seeing Donaldson, Batista, and Encarnacion go back-to-back-to-back, and then you add, you know, Tulowitzki to that, and this, to me, is one of the most entertaining teams on top of all the other stuff we just talked about.
All right, so David Price leaves Toronto. He goes to the Boston Red Sox, and on paper, this looks like one of the best teams in baseball, but I still have some question marks about the Red Sox. What is the concern with Boston if they do now have their ace?
I think the concern is still the rest of the rotation. We saw how it kind of sunk them last year. They went with the approach of, we're just going to get a bunch of dependable guys, not necessarily any aces, but maybe some mid-level inning feeders, and hope that having no weak link in the rotation is going to work out. And clearly that was not the case. Rick Porcello was awful. Wade Miley was not great. And Joe Kelly was a disaster. Two of those three guys are still there, so that's clearly a problem. You know, I can't see any way that Porcello is that bad again. I do like Eduardo Rodriguez, who was called up during the season last year, and he had some up and down starts, but, you know, I think it's tough for pitchers to make that adjustment immediately, and so he's still a guy I like to improve. You know, the thing I kind of like the most, and I think there's plenty of reason to be skeptical when it comes to, you know, projecting a team to be 15 games better over a single season. But the thing I really like most about the Red Sox coming into this year is a lot of their key guys are young, and you can predict improvement from those guys. And I'm talking about Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts. I mean, both of those guys kind of broke out last year.
The Tampa Bay Rays are a young team. They have Evan Longoria and they have Chris Archer, but are they just too young right now, or is there something good happening to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I think the Rays are probably one of the most underrated teams in baseball right now, and I think that's because the things they do well don't usually get recognized by maybe the casual fan. You look at that lineup, and it's not overly impressive. Evan Longoria is no longer in his prime. He's not putting up the numbers we saw, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But the thing that every player in that lineup does really well is play exceptional defense. And I think, you know, that tends to get overlooked. I mean, this is a team that's going to convert a lot of balls into outs, and clearly that makes a difference. And I think, you know, Cash, just from what I've seen with him and some of the games I watched last year, I think he's a really smart manager. I think he can make, you know, the proper bullpen moves, and he'll play, you know, different platoons and adjustments. And I just feel like those are maybe the things that the casual fan doesn't notice, and that's kind of what makes them really dangerous in my mind. And on top of that, the rotation's pretty strong. I mean, if Alex Cobb can come back strong, Drew Smyly was injured most of last year, as was Matt Moore, that's a dangerous rotation.
Baltimore, now you brought up the moves that Baltimore made. Dexter Fowler, Yovani Gallardo. In terms of where the Orioles are, that wasn't a bad team, and now they've added on some other pieces. Where do you expect the Orioles to be?
You know, the Orioles are probably the team in baseball I'm having the most trouble projecting right now. I know a lot of the early systems that came out, the ones from Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs, are not very high in the Orioles. I think the early projections had them at like 72 wins or so. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, clearly Fowler and Gallardo are upgrades in my mind. I just think that they probably don't help this team enough to surpass Boston or New York or Toronto in my mind. With that said, I really like Buck Showalter as a manager. I think he's one of the few guys who I would definitively say makes his team a couple wins better. He seems to do a great job managing his bullpen, and I feel like one of the issues we see with projection systems is they have a hard time quantifying a team with a great bullpen. And I feel like, you know, Baltimore definitely has the capability of doing that. They had a great one last year with Zach Britton and Baron O'Day at the back end. There's a lot to be skeptical about, even though I can admit that they've definitely improved lately.
Chris Swick joins us, Yahoo Sports Big League Stew on the AL East. Now we get to the Yankees. The bullpen is going to be fantastic with Aroldis Chapman now involved in that. But the starting pitching, again, bullpen can cover up the same kind of sins as we talked about with Toronto. But for the Yankees, that starting rotation who had been living with some injuries, how much of a concern is that?
That's a major concern for me. And, you know, with that said, it was a major concern last year, and clearly they made the playoffs and proved me wrong. So I guess, you know, I have to acknowledge that. At the same time, there's no real workhorse in there. I mean, if you're going to pick a guy that's going to go 200 innings for you, it's probably Nate Eovaldi. And I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing at this point. He's just kind of a middle-of-the-road type guy. He's penciled in as their number five. You know, clearly Masahiro Tanaka and Michael Pineda have shown flashes of brilliance, but both have injury issues. Pineda was particularly awful in the second half. CC Sabathia is clearly not the same workhorse that he was earlier in his career, and now on top of it, the innings totals going down, he's definitely had to deal with ineffectiveness over the last couple seasons. And then Luis Severino, who was a young guy and showed plenty of promise last year, he's kind of in that same Stroman category where you love the talent, you think he could maybe be something special, but he didn't throw many innings last season, and you just don't know how much the Yankees are going to push him. He's certainly not going to get to the 200-inning mark this year, and so that's a definite concern. Like you said, the bullpen being so strong, it definitely covers up some of that, and it may be, you know, I know some people looked at the Chapman trade and thought, well, they probably don't need this guy when they have Miller and Betances. But I think when you look at it from that aspect, you kind of see the double benefit of having a guy like Chapman in the back end.
Again, Chris Swick, Yahoo Sports Big League Stew, as we go over the AL East. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Looking forward to doing this next week.
All right, coming up next, Adam and I will go over the American League East and answer some of those questions about the Red Sox and the Yankees and Toronto's formidable lineup. And any surprises in that division? That's coming up next. Your thoughts as well, 800-777-2907. Also, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and on Facebook. Like us there, Tony D Radio Show. All right, coming up next, more baseball talk here on YSR.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, our thanks to Chris Swick joining us on from Yahoo Sports Big League Stew. Talking some Major League Baseball. And again, every week at this time, we'll be doing that, breaking down the divisions of Major League Baseball. And we started off with a bang. I mean, the American League East is a really interesting division about how close and competitive it is. There's no real basement team. There's no guaranteed basement team. You can obviously, there will be. And it could be two teams have a terrible year. Who knows? But right now, the way it stacks out, this is a very competitive division. My only question is, well, all right, I'm sorry. Not my only question. I've got many questions. My question is with the Yankees. The bullpen is fantastic. My question is the starting pitching going to hold up to benefit from that bullpen? Because look, bullpens can shut you down, but what's the point if it's 13-3 and you bring in the bullpen? You know, the starting pitching for the Yankees was ripped apart through injuries. CC Sabathia left early to go to rehab. Masahiro Tanaka was injured. Michael Pineda didn't have a very good year. Goodness gracious, Nate Eovaldi was emerging as probably their better pitcher. Luis Severino is a guy that they brought up that they love. Is the starting pitching going to be okay for the Yankees? You know, and I like getting Starlin Castro. I like the Yankees getting Starlin Castro. I like that. That was a good move for them. They usually don't get guys that young in free agency. Usually they get the older guys that are tailing off their ends of their careers. That's the way the Yankees sign. And also the Red Sox. The Red Sox, I mean, are they a David Price away from being a serious back to a World Series contender? I don't know. A lot of interesting questions, the American League East.
I think the overwhelming theme to this division is what will the pitching do? I mean, Toronto is young with Stroman, Sanchez, and them. They're all coming off injuries. The Red Sox behind David Price look awful.
I mean, Wade Miley, is that it?
Clay Buchholz and Rick Porcello, and it's all bad. They're all bad. And then Tampa Bay's young. And, I mean, Tampa Bay's really good at developing pitchers and bringing them up. And they've got another one coming in Blake Snell. So they'll be interesting. You just mentioned the Yankees. And then the Orioles, who just signed Gallardo today, they have no pitching.
They have no pitching.
They just keep getting hurt every single year. Especially the young kids keep getting hurt that they keep depending on.
I want to ask you this because look, Gallardo, I think, is a good signing. And Dexter Fowler is a good player. But are those change your outlook good signings for the Orioles?
Not for the Orioles, no.
I just don't think so. I think these are good moves, but I don't think they're, okay, now we got to take the Orioles really, really seriously moves. I just don't believe that at all with those two signings.
Yeah, especially with Gallardo, because if you really look at his numbers and, you know, his peripheral stats and all that, he's very scary. His strikeouts have dropped a lot. I think he was in the fives per nine last year, which is a very scary number, especially in the American League and in that AL East with the Blue Jays, who could just tee off on him all day long.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And Dexter Fowler, I really like him. I wanted my White Sox to sign him. I mean, he's a good top-of-the-order on-base guy who will fit nicely in front of Davis.
I covered him in Colorado. I've always liked Dexter Fowler.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
But, like you said, he doesn't change the Orioles into a playoff team. I want Pecota that brings out their projections and every year. I'll run through their standings for the season. They have the Baltimore Orioles finishing in last, 72-90. We can assume that's going to change a little bit with Gallardo and Fowler, maybe 2-3 wins. So 75 wins. They have the Yankees at 85-77, finishing fourth. They have the Blue Jays finishing third at 86-76.
Wow.
They have the Reds.
Let's stop right there for a second. Do they think that the pitching is going to be that much of a problem for the Blue Jays if they finish third in that division?
I guess. I mean, they're still at 86 wins, which puts them fifth in the league.
I guess so.
But and then Boston 88-74. And then they have the Tampa Bay Rays 91-71.
What is it about the Rays?
They do this every year with the Rays.
The Rays have no bullpen.
I know. And it's the same thing. If you look back over the years, and we'll get to this in a few weeks when we do the AL Central, but they have the Kansas City Royals finishing last. They had them finishing last year. So, I mean, every year, the last 2 years, they've had the Royals either last or second to last. So, Pocota's, it's a different thing, but it just kind of shows you what they think of the AL East.
Yeah, it is. It is that crazy. It is that crazy. I like the Blue Jays. I'm not a. I do think their pitching is going to be a problem. I think their offense is going to cover them in a lot of games. Not every game, but enough games. They don't need a good year from R.A. Dickey, do they? They're not counting on that, are they?
He's
41.
He's just got to be an innings eater to me.
That's it.
Like, if they get that out of him, that's what they need. That it's all going to be about that offense. And they're still trying to add. They just tried to add Jay Bruce.
Oh,
which
my
is just
God.
More power to that lineup, which I thought
it's
was
insane.
Crazy because it makes them even worse defensively. But I look at this division. I still think it's the Blue Jays to win.
I don't.
I really like the Red Sox young players, but I mean Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez, you know, David Ortiz is still good, but he's a year older. Dustin Pedroia is a year older.
What happened to Hanley Ramirez?
I have no idea.
Wow. That dude played shortstop and now can't move.
Remember, he was a Red Sox top prospect at one point.
Yeah.
And he was traded for Josh Beckett.
So they got him on there and they moved him to left field. And now they've got him at first base.
Yeah. Which reports aren't very encouraging on that either.
Him and Sandoval, the hefty corners of the Boston Red Sox. Oh, ground ball to short.
Sandoval?
And huh?
Have you seen that picture of Sandoval?
Sandoval can't. He can't make. Come on. Ground ball to third. Sandoval.
I'm not in great shape, but damn.
Throws it to first. He's safe. Red Sox, Yahoo Sports Radio.